the St. Louis Sports Commission Studios, the hosts of the 2025 NCAA Frozen Four and ACHA National Championships, this is College Hockey Coast to Coast, brought to you by the NCHC and NCHC.TV. Subscribe to NCHC.TV for all of the action from the best conference in college hockey. University of Georgia, building the foundations of something bigger. Go to UGAHockey.com to find out how you're part of it on and off the ice. Jets Pizza, we're not just pizza. Try our sidekicks, salads, and calzones at JetsPizza.com. Adrian College, championship aspirations on the ice and in the classroom. For more information, go to AdrianBulldogs.com/MHockeyD1. Caesars Entertainment Resorts and Casinos, from coast to coast and beyond, wherever you need to be, Caesars has a destination that suits your style. Central Oklahoma University Hockey. Go to UCOHockey.com to follow the two-time ACHA national champions as they look to add that third championship banner to the rafters. The Spaghetti Shack. ASU alumni owned and operated at thespaghettishack.com. University of Mary. For tickets and schedule information, visit goumary.com. The Caesars Sportsbook app, where every play earns you Caesars rewards towards dining, tickets, VIP experiences, and more. But please, play responsibly. Jesse Ray's Barbecue in Las Vegas. Award-winning barbecue for your next catered event at jesseraysbarbecue.com. College Hockey Coast to Coast from the St. Louis Sports Commission Studios is a part of the IceTimeHockeyWest.com network. Here are your hosts, Scott Strandy and Paul Hornstein.
Welcome in, hockey fans, anyone that may be listening to us tonight on the Podbean app. We're on time. It's 9:30 Eastern Time, 6:30 Pacific Time. Scott Strandy with you today in beautiful Temecula, California, where we toasted out at about 83 degrees. It was nice. My co-host, as always, Paul Hornstein, joining me from that big, beautiful palatial estate We call the Command Center out on Long Island, New York. Paul, how are things for you today?
They were weird, but you know, nobody tops you in the weird department ever.
No,
so I'm not even.
I look in the mirror every day and I say the same thing. Nobody can top me in weird.
No one can top you in the weird department. I just, you know, and you know, sometimes we come on here and I'm like, do we go into this? I know people don't give a rat's butt, but. But it just, if people only knew.
Yeah, they don't want to know.
Well, first of all, they'd have to believe it.
Yeah. Well, nobody would believe it, first of all. People have told me many times, write a book about your life. I'm going like, first of all, I would need like 24 books. And second of all, none of them would ever be believed by anybody because my life is that much of weird. It's just weird.
Yeah, I just... I just tell you every day. Nothing ever surprises me, but no. It just...
Me either.
Yeah, so...
Me either. I'm here. And the sun is shining. It's 83 degrees. Yeah. Beautiful. About 25 miles from the Pacific Ocean. How far are you from the Atlantic Ocean?
Really only a couple of miles.
Okay, just a couple of miles. So we are literally coast to coast.
Just about.
College hockey from coast to coast.
Yeah, just about. I mean, you know, you probably feel your being that close to the Pacific Ocean a lot better than I feel mine.
Okay, can we go with that thought?
Well, because you have the mountains, we don't have mountains, right? I mean,
yeah I get a little marine layer every morning, and then it blows away by about, I don't know, noon, something like that.
Right.
And then it's just glorious most of the time.
Yeah, but most of the time.
That's neither here nor there at this point. College Hockey Coast to Coast means that we reach out. We go coast to coast. We talk to coaches, players, administrators. Sometimes we even get Hall of Fame radio broadcasters to come on. And that's who we have tonight. So I don't want to waste a whole lot of time digging into this because we got so much to talk about. We've got the Hall of Fame voice of the RIT Tigers. And you notice I said Tigers?
Yes, I
didn't
did.
Say
it was
Tigers.
Well, it's not Colorado College, and you're not a PA announcer. I don't know if Ed's ready for us or not, but
well,
you know.
I got him online, so if he is ready, let's see if we can bring him in. But Ed Tresker is joining us, the voice of Tiger hockey. We crossed paths in Sioux Falls and yet didn't see each other, I don't think. But anyway, Ed, Scott, and Paul with you. Thanks for joining us tonight. How are you?
Great, and it's a real pleasure to be with you. And I didn't realize we had crossed paths. Had I known that we were going to be talking a month later, I would have put out an effort.
Well, I was looking to find you, but everything was so crazy in Sioux Falls, because I'll give you my schedule, right? I came to Sioux Falls and watched both Thursday and Saturday, and then I drove 9 hours down to St. Louis so I could catch that regional final on Sunday. So I was like spinning, Ed. I was like all over the place. But what I will tell you is, so impressed with the RIT Tigers. So impressed with the way they carried themselves, the way they played. Man, I came away with a new love for a team out on the East Coast. So I know you probably don't have anything to do with that, but I'm going to pat you on the back anyway.
Well, I'll pass that along. Yeah, I thought they did great. And, you know, a couple of breakaways, a couple opportunities in that first period against BU, and things could have leaned very much in a different direction.
Yeah, I mean, they there was no question that they were that RIT was a better team in the first period. But, you know, when you're the underdog, you have to capitalize on those, or it makes it much, much tougher when you don't have the heavy favorite on their, you know, back on their heels.
You know? Yeah, and it seemed like BU had an answer for everything. You know, when RIT got it to 3-2 Gianfranco Casero coming out of the penalty box and taking the pass from Ryan Nicholson and coming in on a really pretty sick goal on a breakaway, cutting it to 3-2 made it feel like there was a chance. And then BU answered to make it 4-2, and that kind of put it away.
Paul, let me tell you, this is how you know you got a radio guy on. He can tell you a play from a month and a half ago. He can probably tell you a play from 2 years ago, but maybe longer. Anyway, Ed, it's great to have you on. I don't know how much you know about our show, but we've had one of your co-hosts, Derek Schooley, on multiple times. Love talking with Derek. And what we try to do on Tuesday night is just have a conversation about hockey. So I hope you're up for it.
He doesn't even know what day of the week it is, Ed. He doesn't even know what day of the week it is.
Yeah, yeah.
Monday night. Monday night.
Well, I've had a Monday that feels like it should be Tuesday by now, so I guess that's okay.
I'm telling you, it's been crazy. I'm covering AHL hockey now, and there's so many guys that have left the NCAA ranks and are playing American Hockey League hockey right now. So it's always fun for me to do that, but I get a little confused, so don't mind me. Anyway, tell us how you get to have a Hall of Fame by your name. You're way too young for that.
Yeah, no, not really. You just hang around a long time, and eventually they say, well, who are you going to put in this year? But I was really very pleased and really kind of stunned when the announcement came. But I've been involved with the broadcasts since the first year we started doing them on our student station, and that was the 82-83 season. And during that time, I've been in the studio, in the arena, on air, off air, started filling in on color, came in on play-by-play in a pinch a couple of times, then was kind of the steady backup on play-by-play. And then since the 08-09 season, it's been my primary position on the broadcast. So, you know, I've seen them go from the 82-83, they were in Division II and had to make the choice of going up to D1 or down to D3 after the 83 season. And it was their first year in the NCAAs, and they won a national championship. And we all thought, wow, this is going to be great. But there have been ups and downs over that time, but way more ups than downs for sure.
Okay, so this is this is great, because this is like getting to talk to a living history book. As I sit here, and this is just from my own personal perspective, and whenever I've had a chance to encounter an RIT broadcast, whether it was an audio stream or a video stream. To me, you guys are as good as anybody in the country. So I wanted to get that out there. Scott knows I'm not patting you on the back. I've said this to our audience many, many times. We understand that team broadcasters are going to root for their team to win. It makes it a much better broadcast. But you guys call it down the middle, and I think people should check you guys out on a regular basis if they want to hear what a really good hockey broadcast is all about.
Well, I really appreciate that. I like to describe myself as an objective homer. So, you know, try to call it straight, but not hide who it is that we want to see win. You know, you kind of bleed orange. You know, I'm an alum from there, so it's, you know, I've been a RIT hockey fan since the first game I went to in like January of 1980, I think it was.
So Ed, let me tell you, on our Sunday and Tuesday shows, we cover 14 teams now, kind of closely in the West. We kind of drew a line down the Mississippi River. Paul still doesn't know where that's at, but no. it runs through the center of the country. And on the west side of it, we kind of picked up teams and kind of adopted them. So one of the things that I love about doing this is, well, we're not play-by-play. I get to see a lot of games. And the interesting part of it is you become a fan of a lot of different teams. Paul gives me a bad time because he thinks I have pom-poms. But you maybe saw the picture I put out on Twitter today.
Yes.
He's sucking up right now with a little RIT t-shirt.
Well, yeah, it just so happens that my friend of mine's son is a graduate. So they went up there and got me a shirt. So
anyway, we got so many things to talk about. Can we jump into this right away? Because
sure.
And tell me if you don't want to talk about it, but the portal is something Paul and I have talked about for a long time. Ed, in your view, does the portal need to change, or are we doing okay with it?
Wow. I'm going to start with an easy one. You know, I was thinking a bit about the portal today, and I know the NCAA is just made an announcement last week about not having limits on transferring year to year. But as I got thinking about the portal, well, it depends on which hat I put on. Right. Let me put my RIT hat on first, and then we'll work our way out through Atlantic hockey and so forth. And conversations I had in St. Paul, and I mean, there's so many things to look at. First of all, that RIT team that you saw in Sioux Falls, the six starters on that team are no longer with the team. Two of them, Elijah Gonsalves and Jojo Casero, it was their fifth year, it was the end of it. But right. Since then, Carter Wilkie has left and he's transferred. He's going to be at North Dakota. He was Rookie of the Year his freshman year, Player of the Year last year. So he's going to be at North Dakota. Tommy Scarfone, the goalie of the year in the league, I think it was 928 save percentage on the season, he's going to be at Wisconsin. And when you think about it, another Atlantic Hockey goalie that transferred to Wisconsin, and Kyle McClellan, didn't do too badly. One of the top two defensemen who has a fifth year, Aiden Hansen Bucata. He's going to be at Ohio State, and just a couple of days ago, Cody Laskowski, who had 41 points, tying Carter Wilkie for the team lead, put into the portal, and nothing's been announced on that. So six players from that team, and if you look at Atlantic Hockey, all up and down, you see players going from, especially upperclassmen, going from Atlantic Hockey to larger programs. For Atlantic Hockey, which is going to get some sort of a new branding tomorrow, I understand. For Atlantic Hockey, that at a time when the league is just finished its fourth season with a full 18 scholarships and has built a bunch of new arenas and so forth, and really getting up in the vicinity, I would say, especially this season, of the CCHA, and maybe other than a couple of teams with the ECAC, now is going to see its rosters poached or plucked or whatever every season. And then when you get to the overall thing, it's a kind of a situation that's going to help the haves and hurt the have-nots. And what I think is really more key to it than the transfer portal is how name, image, and likeness is impacting that. If you didn't have NIL money in this, and you were just talking about players finding maybe a higher-up program to go to, maybe you'd see some movement. But I don't think you'd see what you're seeing right now. And from what I understand, and I'm speaking just generally across the board nationally, offers are coming along that are just too good for players to refuse. So it's that money in there. How can a smaller school compete with somebody like, say, University of Minnesota and the Dinkytown Collective that they have for gathering name, image, and likeness money? What kind of a school is going to come up with, it could be a couple of million dollars a year for hockey? That's a hard situation. And it's really one that I expect that down in the coaches' meetings in Naples is going to really set off a firestorm. I don't want to run on here. Certainly, ask whatever. But, I mean, my whole thing with it is that the transfer portal is one thing, but what name, image, and likeness does on top of that really tilts things in the direction of the established programs or the programs with huge alumni bases.
Well, see, it's weird because obviously you're much closer to it than I am, because you hear certain places, well, the NIL money is not there yet, so they don't see it as being that much of a factor yet. Now, again, I'm not there. You're a lot closer to it than I am. Do you think it will settle down a little bit now that the COVID years are over going into next season? Do you think that that's been much of an effect on this too?
Oh, that definitely has. I mean, you get players who have finished their 4 years and they say, hey, let me see what I can do out there. Let me see if I can find an opportunity. And it's harder to hold anything against a player like that. You know, this is your opportunity. Go ahead and take it. And I think that will cut things back a lot. But I also think you're going to see teams lose underclassmen.
Right.
For example, during the Frozen Four in St. Paul, we were doing some USCHO podcasts from there.
Right.
And we had all of the different conference commissioners on as guests. And the guy who came on who was more vocal about not liking the transfer portal and what it's doing to smaller schools was Don Lucia. Now, when he was at University of Minnesota, he was at one of the big programs. But
right.
You take his past at CC and up in Alaska before that, he really was familiar with the small schools. And he pointed to Bemidji in 2009 making the Frozen Four and RIT in 2010 making the Frozen Four. And he said, how are schools like that going to be able to do that nowadays if their best players are going to end up going somewhere else? I mean, we just saw Polkamp today with 3 years of eligibility go from Bemidji to Denver. So he was very, very vocal about it and very, very passionate about it. And so I think that you're going to see two very different factions on this in Naples at the coaches' meetings.
And that was really interesting the way you brought that up about the NIL, because like Paul and I said, I've heard rumblings, but I haven't heard a lot of it. And I've talked to a lot of coaches that have said, are players being poached? We all know that there's conversations. We know there's agents out there, advisors, in air quotes. So we know there's talk. I don't know how they're going to stop that. But I told Paul this on a couple of shows ago. I said, I wonder if the coaches are going to start having more heart-to-hearts with their players. And you can probably tell this from a better perspective, but if I'm a Frank Saratori, for example, and I'm talking to somebody coming to the Air Force Academy, and I'm giving him the lowdown about how good we can be and how awesome it can be in your experience. And then all of a sudden the kid packs it up after 2 years and decides, yeah, you know, I just want to go to greener pastures or whatever. Do you think those heart-to-hearts are happening with coaches, parents, and players and advisors now going like, hey, if I invest in you, I expect you to be around a certain amount of time?
You know, I think those conversations are happening. I can speak firsthand about what Wayne Wilson has said at RIT. And he spoke on this in the press conference in Sioux Falls. And all along as head coach, he has taken the position, we're making a commitment to you. We're going to have a place for you. He's left scholarships available for players who want to come back for that extra year. And he spoke fairly eloquently when asked about the age difference between RIT and BU at that press conference. And he said, hey, it's not that we're going after older players. It's that the players are staying here. Now, things turned out a little differently afterwards as things went forward. But, you know, you take the instance of Air Force and you know, for Frank Ceratori and Brian Riley at Army. They can have players transfer out, and both schools had players transfer out this off season, but they can't take transfers in.
Yeah,
I mean, it happens very, very rarely, but if you transfer into a service academy, you basically have to start all over. So. You know, they're stuck in that situation. You also have schools such as the Ivies, or in Atlantic Hockey, Holy Cross. The Ivies don't allow you to play in a graduate year. Holy Cross doesn't have graduate programs. So they've seen those fifth years end up going somewhere else from those schools too. So it hasn't been a level playing field. Getting rid of, like we talked before, getting rid of the fifth year from COVID, this being the last year of that, that's going to help too.
All right. So for those that don't know, you can give us a little timeline here because, you know, as we've tried to expand our way towards covering as much as we can in terms of the East Coast, give people a little bit of background on Atlantic Hockey in terms of, as you mentioned earlier, this is the first four-year cycle where they've given out scholarships. I don't think people understand what happened there.
Well, it's the end of 4 years of being with the full complement of 18 scholarships. The predecessor to Atlantic Hockey was the MAC, Metro right. Atlantic Athletic Conference.
Iona, Fordham, the whole...
Right, Iona and Fairfield were original members of that, and they left. And basically, it's like, we're not really the MAC anymore. And Atlantic Hockey was formed a little over 20 years ago. And at the time, I believe the limit on scholarships was 11. When RIT joined Atlantic Hockey for the 06-07 season, RIT, as a Division III institution, was not grandfathered under the rules that let teams like Colorado College or Clarkson, St. Lawrence, RPI, Union, schools like that offer athletic scholarships. Now, I'm sorry, I mentioned Union, but Union, right. I shouldn't have mentioned there. Union and RIT, a couple of years ago, NCAA said, okay, since we're not allowing any more teams to play up from D3, everybody can be on the same playing field. So RIT got scholarships. But Atlantic Hockey gradually increased it, 11, 12, and finally got up to 18 full scholarships, plus schools have built new arenas. So Atlantic Hockey's on a level playing field with the rest of the country as far as that. Almost everybody has their own ice arena now. There's several that are just terrific. I still haven't been able to get to Sacred Heart because the schedules had Sacred Heart visiting in Rochester, but I'm hoping next season to get to go to what I hear is a real palace of the Martiri family ice arena. So go ahead.
I was going to say the Policini Center that you guys play in, it's not that old.
Right. It's going to celebrate its 10th anniversary in October. It opened in October 2014. And it's a great facility. And it's taken a little while to grow into, I think.
Right.
The old arena, Ritter Arena, had a capacity of 2,100, 1,600 seats and 500 standing, and used to have to get there early and get in line if you wanted to get in or get a ticket at big games. Policini Center opened, and seeing really excellent crowds, 2,800, 3,200, 3,500, but not really getting up to sellout level. This year there were, I don't know, three sellouts in like the last five games, including the championship game, which not only was sold out with tickets, but it was well over 98% of the tickets scanned in. So 4,300 people in there, loud building, just amazing. So it's taken a little while to grow into it, but the facility is really nice. Good size for the school. I mean, to give you an idea about that sellout, when tickets went on sale for the Atlantic Hockey Championship at 10 o'clock on a Monday morning, by 11:30, it was sold out. They had 200 extra to give back on a Friday, and at noon, they went on sale, and at 12:02, they were sold out. So,
nice.
So it's a good atmosphere there. Nice facilities. They've continued to do some upgrades. I understand there's going to be new lighting in this offseason and so forth.
And let me ask you about Atlantic Hockey itself. Because Paul and I have been talking for the last couple of years about what year is it going to be that Atlantic gets two teams into the tournament. And I'll piggyback that off. Paul and I have been pushing the envelope as hard as we can to see if there's any way that the NCAA will consider 20 or 24 teams in the tournament to make it happen. But how close is RIT? Is it as close as it looks to us as outsiders to getting two teams to play?
Yeah. It really, when you look at the pairwise, the big component that impacts how many teams a league will get in is the out-of-conference record. And Atlantic Hockey has been, last couple of years, last few years, in the upper, you know, like 370, 380 percentage. You really need to get above 400. I think to get in there, and a team needs to do well out of conference. And RIT has been the last few seasons right around 500, and this year 4-3-1 in its eight out of conference games, including a shutout of Notre Dame and a split with New Hampshire and a win over Clarkson. So, you know, it's competing kind of in the middle to upper middle of the overall college hockey scene. But when the whole league has a lower out of conference winning percentage, that kind of drags you down in the pairwise. So I think it's possible. It's happened once before when Niagara got upset in the semifinals of the league, and they had such a good season that they squeaked in. But since then, some things have been adjusted in the pairwise. And from what I understand, there may be some adjustments this offseason. So yeah, on the second question about 20 or 24 teams, I think from the people I've talked to, commissioners and people on the committee and so forth, I think we're probably, we probably need to get to like 72 teams or more before they expand it. I mean, right now, once everybody who's playing now is eligible, you're going to have 64 teams, and 16 is a really nice 25%. Personally, I wouldn't mind seeing it expand. If you went to 18 or 20 and maybe had a play-in round, maybe if you go to 18 and the bottom four play down to two, or if you go to 20 and the bottom eight play down to four, and then go to regionals. I mean, that's a possibility, but I don't think I would see it happening real soon. I've seen people suggest, well, what about 32? But the problem is you start eliminating, if you keep the same rule that you don't get in if you're below 500 as an at-large, then you start getting into people that are teams that are like 40 or so in the pairwise. So I don't see that happening either.
Well, let me ask this question. and I put it this way because it almost seems like a chicken or the egg scenario. I know we scream here all the time about we need more teams.
Yep.
And the only way you're going to get more teams is for those teams to have a legitimate chance to get into the NCAA tournament. Because, you know, last year with Fairbanks.
Right.
I recuse myself when it comes to this year as an ASU alum. You know, Scott, you know, it's like they had 24 wins and we're 20th in the parallel. That's his argument. I stay out of that because I don't want anybody to think that, I'm wearing the wrong color glasses.
Homer, that's what you don't want to think. Homer.
But the fact of the matter is, if you're the NCHC or you're the Hockey East or the big, you're not worried about it. You're getting 2, 3, 4 teams in every year.
Mm-hmm.
And not everybody gets the ability like Penn State to come into Division I hockey with a league already set up to go.
Right.
And at the same time, and this is legit, and I completely understand the Atlantic Hockey argument because people are like, well, can Atlantic Hockey take this team or that team or this team? And you can confirm this, right? The league's argument is we broke our behinds to get to the point where we're close to getting that second bid. And then you want us to destroy our standing in the pairwise?
Right. No, that's exactly the case. And you hit upon a few good things there. First of all, we definitely need more teams. There is enough Division I caliber talent out there to support maybe 80 teams. If you see the elite Division III hockey programs, they're terrific. And there are players there who either just couldn't find a spot in Division I, or maybe they couldn't get through the clearinghouse academically, but you've got some terrific talent among, say, the top 15 or 20 teams at D3. The problem we have right now with leagues is, I think it's until next June, the NCAA has a moratorium that ends then, that they've had for a few years on starting additional single sport leagues, and they would like to have more multi-sport conferences. So you're in a situation where either you need a conference to sponsor a hockey league, or you have to wait to form one. And I know there's been discussion on the East Coast about some of the teams that are playing essentially without an NCAA tournament at Division II in New England, forming a league to play at Division I. That's been a long time dream of former Atlantic Hockey Commissioner Bob DiGregorio. So that's a situation. So you really need leagues. And Arizona State's a terrific example of that. I mean, they had a great record this year, but a couple of difficult losses or wins that were at home in an overtime that count you only as part of a win. Last season, they put together a terrific schedule, and however you want to chalk it up, some bad bounces, some bad puck luck, and they didn't quite get it done. I think that ASU is gonna flourish in the NCHC. Maybe they're not going to be a top team right away, but they're going to get there pretty quickly. And Greg Powers said to us in a USCHO interview that part of the reason he's been able to build the coaching staff he has is because they're going to be in the NCHC. So you're going to see some, as good as they've been, you're going to see an uptick in caliber. But again, that points to needing to be in a conference. So Yeah, you've got schools out there. You know, what do the Alaska schools do? Where does LIU go, or Lindenwood, or, you know, Stonehill? You got to find a place for them, and you're just not going to have a place to go. But the other thing I'm worried about with the number of teams, we've been around this 60 and a little above mark before, but we've seen schools. I mentioned Iona and Fairfield before, Findlay, right. Wayne State, Alabama, Huntsville, go back a little bit, Kent State, Illinois, Chicago, go through that. You've seen programs go away. And my concern is the impact of money and NIL. Is that going to come along and cause schools to say, we just can't keep up money-wise, we're going to have to step back? So that's a concern.
Well, there's that. And as you heard in the introduction, I live on Long Island.
Yep.
Okay. And I've seen the stories about Binghamton and Utica.
Yep.
Wanting to make that jump to Division One, but they're not going to do it until they have a league. And these are schools that want to do it. Utica averages 3,000 a game for Division Three hockey. And Binghamton wants to start a program, and nobody can say that they're geographically not aligned with people. I don't know how far they are because I haven't looked it up.
Yeah, Utica, I grew up about 10 minutes east of Utica, and so I'm very familiar with that area. Utica from RIT is about 2 hours to 2:15.
Okay.
It's pretty close. Binghamton is probably 3 hours, maybe not that much. It just seems like it when you drive there.
Oh yeah, I know.
But they're not that far away. But you know, Utica is still a Division III university, and so they've got to at least move up to Division II before they can add D1 hockey. So I don't know how quickly that might happen. Binghamton, their AD about a year ago was guns a-blazing, we're going to do this and be ready for the 24-25 season.
Yeah, well.
And then that whole conversation disappeared. You know, you look at LIU, they seem like they would be good in the footprint of Atlantic hockey, but I know the conference has been, now this is not to say I have any inside knowledge right now on it, but the conference has been, as you said, reluctant to take on programs that maybe aren't established where they need to be and don't have their own facility. And that's by no means a knock on an outstanding job Brett Riley has done there.
Well, I'll say this, and I'll stick up for Atlantic Hockey. How come nobody gets on the ECAC's case about bringing in a team or two?
Right.
Let's go, people. Let's not put this all on Atlantic Hockey. Okay? You know, there are plenty of upstate New York teams in the ECAC too.
Oh yeah. So, I mean, one thing that I've talked about in joking is if you put together a New York State college hockey conference and maybe leave out Cornell because they're part of the Ivies, you would have a 10-team conference all in New York State.
Yeah. And much to the chagrin of the folks in that, state that starts with an M on that's by the Mississippi River.
Oh, you know what that is now. Okay.
Yeah.
I know that.
Yeah, we've got 11 college hockey programs in New York State in Division One.
Crazy.
Right. Right. And I know those M people don't like to acknowledge that, but it's too bad.
Anyway. Can I ask Ed one more question? Ed, I got on the bandwagon on I got on the Twitter wars because I put something out about the pairwise and everybody thought I was trying to back ASU and it wasn't. It was about independence, but this is why I look at it from a fan perspective and growing the game and that type of thing. When you look at a win-loss record of a team and everybody tells me, oh, the parity's never been better. College hockey's never been better. The players, the teams, the coaches, it's as great as it ever gets. But yet, when you look at a team like Arizona State getting 24 wins, everybody looks at it and says, yeah, but soft schedule. Yeah, but home games. Yeah, but this. Yeah, but that. But the problem with it is as a sports fan, if you look in, and I'll use this dirty word, newspaper, years ago.
Newspapers.
you would say, the first thing I would look at is the standings, right? And you would look at the win-loss record. And you'd go like, oh, my team's in first or my team's in third because of the win-loss record. But it seems like in college hockey that that's not really true for independents. It's true for everybody else. You look at this year's tournament, and most teams had 20 or more wins, but you got this one outsider with 24 wins, and they're not getting an opportunity to. Is there some sort of changes that need to happen to that, or is it just strictly get in a conference and things will change for you?
Well, the big problem is that everybody plays a different schedule. So you've got to come up with some sort of way to determine a strength of schedule, because clearly the schedule that, I'll just pick a random team. The schedule that Clarkson plays and the schedule that Wisconsin plays, and then maybe say the schedule that Lindenwood plays, are very different in how strong their opponents are. So that's where the RPI comes in. And that's been a formula that has been massaged over and over. So a few years ago, they said, well, we need to encourage teams at big programs to go on the road. So we'll count a road win as more than a home win. And then they said, well, and we need to reward teams for beating the teams at the top. So they put a quality win bonus in there. And then over the years, they've moved the formula around on how much counts for what part of your schedule. So 25%, I'm going to quick look this up as I'm saying it, so I don't give everybody the wrong numbers. But so 25% of the RPI is based on your winning percentage, and that you can completely control. And then 21% is the average winning percentage of your opponents. And then the remaining 54% is the winning percentage of a team's opponent's opponents. So basically, 75% of the value of the RPI is out of your hands, except for your schedule. And the only part you can really control in that is your non-conference schedule. And the non-conference schedule, like we talked about before, is what kind of moves things around. Now, I understand that we may see the men adopt what the women's pairwise used this year, the NCAA percentage index. And I'm not equipped to explain all of that to you, but it's
Nobody is. It
does include winning percentage and a weighted average percentage of the opponent's NPI. And from what I'm told by our publisher at USCHO, Tim Brule, who also does all the math and programming on this stuff, that it's a far more complicated algorithm than the RPI and takes a lot more horsepower to calculate. But we may see that. But it really comes down to an attempt to say, all right, not all winning percentages are equal. It depends on how tough a schedule you played. So, we're always going to have something like that, because otherwise you could have a really strong team that played in a strong conference who might have 18 or 20 wins booted for a team that might have 24 wins but got them against some much lesser opponents.
And I fully understand that, and I appreciate your explanation, because I understand what's going on. But I also wear a sales hat, and when I go out to talk to salespeople, and they, especially out here in the West, maybe hockey's not top of mind, shall I say, like in the East or Midwest. But they'll tell me, like, I don't get it. I don't understand why a team with 24 wins is 20th, but another team with 24 wins. And then you try to explain it to them, and they just go, yeah, you know what? It's too complicated.
Yeah.
I'm worried about that as somebody that started a company 8 years ago to grow the game. I'm worried that we're missing out on partners, fans, all of those things, because it doesn't look right. And when you explain it and you understand it, you know, I get it. but well, I don't know if the general public does.
Yeah, I mean, if I had to explain it to somebody simply, I said I would just say that what also gets taken into account is how tough the schedule was. And, you know, we talked a little bit about this in St. Paul with Jeff Shulman, who's the AD at Vermont and the chair of the D1 Men's Ice Hockey Committee. I think he's got one more year in that position. And he and his predecessor, Steve Metcalf, when he was at New Hampshire, and he's now the commissioner of Hockey East, they've been very open in discussing this. And the thing that Jeff pointed out when we said, well, what about giving the committee some leeway on maybe the last two positions and let them do it by an eye test? And Jeff said, look, when I talk to people from other committees, everybody is jealous of us because we go by the numbers. It's completely transparent. And, you know, it is what it is. Everybody knows what you have to do to get in there. And this year we were watching, you know, it came down to the last night. Is it going to be Omaha or Denver winning in the NCHC? And that determined whether it was going to be CC or UMass. And, you know, that's how Boston University and RIT ended up in Sioux Falls, because UMass had to be in Springfield as the host. It was all coming down to that. And there were, like, I don't know, 32 possible scenarios coming into the end of it. So I do like the transparency. The one year when we didn't have it by the numbers because there was not enough games between conferences was the COVID year, and the committee just kind of did it there, and then they got a little bit of flack. Well, how can you have three CCHA teams and all that kind of stuff? So there's going to be trade-offs there. I don't know if there's a perfect answer. There may be better formulas for comparing teams, but you're still going to have to compare schedules one way or another.
And I'm going to tell you right now, there is no perfect way. There's no way to get around it, but I don't know. When I look at it, I just go, like, it looked odd to me as a sports fan looking at the win-loss column. And the one thing that I guess I got off on a bandwagon situation was, a stool and did my speech in a soapbox. But when you look at everybody says that the teams are so good all the way across the board, and you ask any coach and they say, hey, anybody can beat anybody on any given night, and we don't take anybody lightly. Everybody's worried about Stonehill, you know, not having won a game, then all of a sudden they win a game. And, you know, I mean, and you look across the board, and I understand that there's still some obviously weaker teams and better teams, but the closer this gap gets, it seems like there must be a way somehow. And Paul and I have thrown it out. I just want to get your opinion on this. We suggested, or I made the suggestion, that maybe if we want to grow the game, we take the independents and we let them play a quote-unquote tournament, or maybe you just take the highest-ranked one, but you give them a spot. And Paul said, why don't we go with 20 teams in the tournament and give them the last spot? Because the way I look at it is that if you're recruiting a kid to play college hockey, he wants the chance to at least try for an NCAA championship. They all want to get a ring, right? And if you're going to Fairbanks or Anchorage or Lindenwood, your opportunity to even play for a ring is so slim. I mean, you have to go like 33-3 to get a last spot. So that's the thing that I'm looking at, is how do we get that? And I was just wondering what your thoughts are on maybe trying to bring the independents into their own sort of conference without it being a conference.
Yeah, I suppose that could work. You're still going to have a team that's on the line. You know, whoever's the 20th team, you know, say this year, who would have been the 20th team? The 20th team would have been Arizona State. So you would have bumped Arizona State, well, unless they won it.
Right, yeah. I mean, it's not a perfect thing. I'm just concerned about the independents not really having a fair fight. We talked about NLI and what that means, but it's also the fact that how are they going to recruit top players even if they want to go to a school when they have to look them in the eye and go like, hey, listen, even if we go 33-3, we might not get in. You know what I mean? Because we don't have a conference tournament. We don't have the criteria. Because let's be honest, the independent teams can't form a very good schedule because, A, they have to play other independents, and, B, they only have so many shots at the big boys because they only have before and after their conferences, right, or a holiday tournament or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, that's the big issue, and that's why we just need more conferences.
All right, so I have a couple of really divergent things here to bring up.
Okay.
You talked about the guys that are leaving Wayne Wilson's program. You have a bunch of young guys that are coming back that got regular playing time this past season. And you're also getting a pretty good goalie in return in Trent Burnham, who was pretty good last year for Lindenwood. Has Wayne Wilson talked to you about, or what is your feeling going forward into next season with all the young guys that they have coming back?
Well, that's a good question. The last chance I had to talk with Wayne is he happened to be on the same flights back from St. Paul. And that was before a couple of guys left. But
RIT
is going to be one of the younger RIT teams we've seen in a while. But there is tremendous talent coming in. And one of the things that's helped that is having 18 scholarships. It used to be RIT would have to try to get guys through financial aid and whatever academic scholarships possibly might be there, but that has to follow the same rules as everybody. Now they make an offer and somebody says yes. So they've got a lot of good young talent coming back up front. These guys may be put into battle is the top line. We had a freshman line that skated together this year. 2 years ago, they skated for the Toronto Junior Canadians in the OJHL. And then one of them went on to the NAHL. But Tyler Fukukusa centering Matthew Wild and Christian Catalano. Wild had 19 goals for RIT and inexplicably was left off the league's all-rookie team.
Right.
But so they're coming back. You've got some good freshman defensemen. You've got some really high-powered talent coming in, two freshman goalies. And, you know, everybody's saying really great things about Trent Burnham. So I think the Tigers, while it's not the same as having Scarfone, from what I hear, Burnham had some outstanding games, and he was called upon to make a whole – bucket load of saves at Lindenwood. So I think the Tigers will be okay. You know, maybe it's a step back because they've got a couple of players they didn't expect to lose, but I think they'll be ready and they'll be right in the mix of it.
Okay. The other thing is, and I just, you know, that is, I assume that, you know, the, it does help the league having those new buildings. Like I've been to Bentley, I've been to Holy Cross. Those are really nice buildings. I haven't been to Sacred Heart yet either. I did see ASU in their first season play against Sacred Heart, but that was many, many moons ago. Does it look like that? I mean, it would seem to me to be that the league is at least at a spot now where even with some departures, it's kind of holding steady. Would that be a realistic comment to make?
Well, I hope that's the case. And I think there's enough talent out there to find homes in Atlantic hockey. You know, you've also got Robert Morris beginning fundraising and plans to build an on-campus arena. I think that helps. Everybody's got at least adequate or more than adequate facilities. And there's some real jewels in there too. So I think that helps. One of the things that was difficult for some teams to recruit in Atlantic hockey in previous years is like, oh, maybe you recruit somebody to your really nice arena, but then they've got to go play a couple of dozen road games at some sketchy places. And, you know, there are no sketchy places now, but back when Bentley was playing at the John A. Ryan Skating Arena or Sacred Heart was in the Milford Ice Pavilion, those were subdivision three quality arenas. Those were, you know, sort of okay community rinks. And, you know, they've jumped way beyond that now. And so that makes a difference. That helps the whole league in recruiting.
One of the other your website, and I encourage many people all the time to go check out this article that you guys had on your website in July of 2013. Okay, it's kind of my go-to article for people who talk about college hockey on the West Coast. So, like I said, I don't expect you to remember it. It was 10 years ago.
Yeah, I do vaguely remember it. Yeah.
Written by Jason Haran. And I use it, by the way, to really get under the fingernails of the people from that M state, by the way, because they have a losing record against USC.
Well, you know, I think we asked Adam Augustine from the Big Ten out in St. Paul about it, and he smiled and was very diplomatic about it. But as those Power Five conferences have reached tentacles out, maybe there's a possibility for some West Coast teams there. You know, Arizona State finding a place in the NCHC, there's certainly places in the West that could hop on. And let's not forget the South. There's a huge area there, and hockey has gotten so huge in parts of the South that you'd think there'd be an opportunity there. It's the same nice weather in January in Florida or Alabama that you get in Tempe, except maybe it's not the dry heat. But
that's part of what we talk about growing, you know, more teams and having places for people to play. Because we hear rumors all the time about other schools south of the Mason-Dixon line that are bigger schools. And we're nothing against Huntsville. We wish they were back. But, you know, bigger schools that you know, are flying, that some have been more outward with their desire to figure it out than others.
Yeah, there are a lot of schools with really big-time club hockey teams, and if they can figure out how to add men and women at the same time and a facility and do it with a budget that fits, then they can do it. You're going to have to do men and women both or find another women's sport from a Title IX standpoint.
Yeah, good point.
And my last one's gotten in because just, and this is really off the reservation, so to speak. You know, when I was going to school and stuff, there was all kinds of charts and and then I look at your profile, Jazz Week. What's that? We love things that have to go back to old school radio, rate charts and top 20s and top whatever and airtime. We love that. So what's that all about?
Well, that's a kind of a side project that I've had for 23 years now. Basically does a airplay chart and gathers data on what's being played on mostly non-commercial jazz radio stations around the U.S.
Okay. Which there are a lot of those, by the way. It's not like, it's not like those are rare. So,
right.
Okay. Yeah. I was just curious.
Yeah. I wear a lot of hats.
Okay.
Ed, thanks so much for joining us. I know we kept you a long time, and we appreciate your time. We hope we can do this again because so much to talk about in college hockey. The next time we're in an arena together, and I guess we were in St. Paul together as well. Who knows where we've been together, but let's run into each other, say hello, maybe have some snacks or something to talk about.
Yeah, I'd be delighted. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks, Ed.
That's Ed Trutzker, the Hall of Fame voice of RIT Tigers hockey. And one last shout out for you, if you want, shout out this USCHO podcast that you do, because our good friend Derek Schooley, of course, works with you on that as well. But where can people get it? How do they find it?
Just go to uscho.com and then you can click on the podcast link at the top. We do three of them a week. The Monday one is with Derek Schooley and Jim Connolly. And we're going to have one more episode after he gets back from Naples to kind of wrap up the season and talk a little bit about what will have gone on down there at the coaches convention.
Well, can't wait for it. It's good stuff. Thanks, Ed. We appreciate it. Paul and I will be right back to wrap up another episode of College Hockey Coast to Coast in 2 minutes.
It's time to drop the puck on the nation's best college hockey conference. We bring you closer to the action all season long with access to exclusive on-demand content and more than 140 live games. Catch every big goal and clutch save. When you can't be there, we have you covered here. Stream on your phone, computer, or straight to your TV, and don't miss a moment from your favorite team. Subscribe now to watch the best in college hockey at NCHC.TV. If it's NCHC hockey, it's on NCHC.TV.
The St. Louis Sports Commission invites you to become part of the legacy of the Heartland of Hockey as they and the city of St. Louis host 2025 NCAA Frozen Four and ACHA National Championships. From the Stanley Cup to college champions to an exploding youth hockey community, St. Louis hockey has a long storied tradition. Find out how you can be a part of it by visiting us at www.stlsports.org. The St. Louis Sports Commission, making St. Louis a better place to live, visit, work, or play through sports.
Passion, talent, development. NCAA hockey offers all that, and its players graduate at a 93% rate. Trevor Zegras.
And they score on the lacrosse move.
Jake Gensel.
Banks it towards the goalie. Score.
Kale McCarr.
He scores.
Stars on campus before the NHL stage. Whether you're a fan or a player, nothing compares to college hockey. CollegeHockeyInc.com and follow at College Hockey.
After a hard day at work or a long week, what's better than good comfort food to put you at ease? At the Spaghetti Shack, we say the answer is comfort food that's made by somebody else. The Spaghetti Shack has taken spaghetti and meatballs, the classic Italian comfort food, to a portable level. ASU alumni owned and operated, the Spaghetti Shack has three locations at 6340 South Rural Road in Tempe, the ASU location at 922 East Apache Road, and 952 West White Mountain Road in Pine Top. For lunch, dinner, or catering as well, call us at 480-687-2485 or order online at thespaghettishack.com. When you talk about the best of Las Vegas, you're talking about the best of the best. So when you're at Jesse Ray's Barbecue and you're a three-time winner of the Best of Las Vegas Award, it speaks for itself. At 308 North Boulder Highway in Henderson, come and savor our People's Choice Award-winning barbecue ribs. Or maybe just come in and pick up a bottle of our best in Las Vegas barbecue sauce to take home. Open 7 days a week. You can order online at jesseraysbarbecue.com. And for an occasion that will be remembered for a long time, call us for all of your catering projects at Jesse Ray's Barbecue today. From the St. Louis Sports Commission Studios, hosts of the 2025 NCAA Frozen Four and ACHA National Championships, this is College Hockey Coast to Coast.
Indeed it is, College Hockey Coast to Coast. Scott Strandy with you tonight from Temecula, California, where the sun is setting on a beautiful 83-degree day. Anybody jealous out there, don't move here. Too many people, too many cars, too high taxes, too high gas. You don't like it here. You don't want to come here.
No, clearly not.
Anyway, my co-host joining me from Long Island, New York, from the big, beautiful Palatial Estate Command Center. Paul, you know, every time we have a guest, it's always great conversation. And I always like to get a couple of points that maybe you heard and see if they're different from what I heard. What did you take away from our conversation with the Hall of Fame voice of Tigers hockey, Ed Tresker?
Well, here's the thing, right? You know me. I love institutional knowledge. Okay? Because I'm relatively...
And you still want to talk with me?
Well, no, you have it. You're not always right about it. But you have it. You've been around.
Come on now. I'm always right. Say that word. You're always right.
No. That's never happening. You might have different viewpoints than I do.
But I do love tigers.
Anyway, he has that institute. Like, I could sit here for hours and asking him about the journey that RIT made from the early days all the way up till now. Because that would be a history book of how the game of college hockey has changed. And, you know, they went from Division III to Division II, and then I think they went back to Division III and then made the jump up to Division I. And it's the schools like RIT that make Division I hockey the unique and awesome game that it is. So he's got that background that I can sit there and ask questions all day. And listen, we also know we have to ask certain questions, and we also know that they can only say so much.
Yeah, I mean, there is no perfect way. So let me get that out there right now. I don't have a perfect way. You don't have a perfect way. Nobody's got a perfect
no,
way.
No, I have perfect ways. I do.
It's not a perfect system. And unfortunately, I just look out for two different sides of things. I want to see the game grow with fan support, with new teams, with corporate partners. David Carl talked about the need to get the NCAA championship on quote-unquote mainstream TV, over-the-air TV, if you will.
It still matters. It still matters.
I know. And that's what I mean, is that you need to continue to grow this game. And I thought it was interesting that he said probably nobody's going to take growth of the tournament seriously, so there's 72 teams. Well, if that's the case, and I have no reason to doubt him, that you better start finding some ways to get more teams, because you're about 8 short by my count right now, yeah. And you need to get this tournament up to 20 or 24 teams. There's just no other way around it. You got to find a way to get it done. Because otherwise your sport's going to stymie. Yeah. And if it stymies, it's not good. It's not good for money-making. He's talking about NIL, and I think Ed knows a little bit more than we do about this NIL stuff and how influential it is for players, because it sounds to me like some of their players got plucked for dollars.
I'm sure that some of them did. I do remember listening to Wayne Wilson and his comments. It's one, and it seemed like it was also based on upfrontness, that a couple of players left and he knew it and they had talked about it. And then a couple of players at least one player blindsided him and didn't tell him. So you can't
And like Ed was saying, you can't really blame a kid, especially if you're a fifth year and it's out there for you, to try to better yourself, right?
Yeah, I don't think anybody has a qualm with that. Those guys have put in their 4 years and they have a chance to play an extra year. And I don't think anybody has a problem with somebody who's been somewhere for 4 years.
No. And I'm saying even the younger guys, though, if you let's be honest, if you're playing in Atlantic Hockey and you have a chance to play in Big Ten, NCHC, or wherever, you're gonna do that, because it's an opportunity. And we're looking at TJ Sempfenfelter, for example, who has a chance to better himself. He's graduated at Arizona State. It'll always be his undergrad, and now he's got the opportunity to play another year and get a master's degree, and then also increase his stock, because let's face it. These guys that are on the border, and TJ's one of them. He played behind a great goaltender at Northeastern.
Devin Levi.
He established himself at Arizona State. But guess what? It's about playing in that tournament. It's about eyeballs and TV cameras and things like that. If he's going to get a look at the next level, and he knows it. So,
well, he was told,
you know, I don't hold any grudges for TJ for making that move because
of course not.
It was there. Go do it. You know, if somebody wants you, you got to do it. But I also think, and I'll end it on this one, is I also think there are some hardcore conversations going on between coaches right now in college hockey, parents and players. And those conversations go something like this. If I'm going to invest in you with scholarships and NIL dollars and whatever, I'm expecting something in return. So you tell me up front, is it going to be 3 years, 2 years, 4 years? What do you want? Right. And if something happens in the middle of that, okay, we can have a conversation. And if you need to go, you need to go. But I just think these guys jumping ship 2-3 times for you know, better, greener pastures, I just think that's going to come to an end by the coaches. I think the coaches are going to put their foot down and say, listen, I'm not training you to play for somebody else, and certainly not somebody else in our conference.
Yeah, well, there's no doubt. Just a couple of quick things, because I know we are going to run out of time here soon. And we discussed it. Speaking of greener pastures, David Carl, stay at Denver. Stay at Denver.
The colors in Seattle are emerald, my friend. They're not green.
Stay in Denver.
Everybody in the world knows that people are coming after him. I'm sure he has fielded more than enough calls about that. And
that's
David will make his right decision. No doubt about that.
That's one. And two, and I don't know what Steven's doing there in Vegas tonight. But I don't care what anybody says. The goal that Logan Thompson gave up tonight in the first period to tie the game at one is, again, the goalie going down. He got the puck hit on the goal line. There's no way a shot from the goal line should ever go in. Stay on your feet.
Okay. Goalie 101, Paul Hornstein. Send him a message on X. Do whatever.
Yeah, I'm just saying. I mean,
Goalie 101. Take it away.
From the St. Louis Sports Commission Studios, hosts of the 2025 NCAA Frozen Four and ACHA National Championships, this has been College Hockey Coast to Coast, brought to you by Jesse Riz Barbecue at 308 North Boulder Highway in Henderson, where our food can be summed up in one word, perfection. Liberty University, strengthen your faith and your game at the premier ACHA M1 program on the East Coast at liberty.edu. Caesar Sportsbook app, proud partner of the NHL. College Hockey, Inc., your NCAA hockey resource. The Spaghetti Shack, classic Italian comfort food quickly. Two locations in Tempe and one in Pine Top. Lunch, dinner, or your next catered event at thespaghettishack.com. Caesars Entertainment Resorts Casinos, where the action is from the Atlantic to the Pacific and around the world. And by FedEx, deliveries made easy no matter where you are. The official delivery company of Ice Time Hockey West. College Hockey Coast to Coast and all of the Ice Time Hockey West podcasts are live every week on the Podbean app or for download on your favorite podcast platform by searching and subscribing to ITHSW Podcasts, all one word. That's ITHSW Podcasts, all one word. If you like what you hear, tell a friend or leave a positive review. College Hockey Coast to Coast from the St. Louis Sports Commission Studios is a part of the IceTimeHockeyWest.com network.
Very well done, my friend. We will say a good hearty goodbye with fellow Roger Klein, the Peacemaker's Hello New Day. Good night, everybody.
Good night.